Chapter 4. Nico slammed hard into a stone column. Then he tumbled to the ground, breathless, and grasped for his blade. But it wasn't there. He groaned, and the sound reverberated in a long, haunting echo. His skin felt sticky and damp. Was that sweat? Blood? He decided he didn't want to know. As his eyes adjusted to the low light, he saw a smoke-stained ceiling overhead, barrel arches stretching between rows of limestone columns. He rolled to his side. Bright bands of sunlight filtered through a row of high-set barred windows, making stripes of shadow across the floor. It was that image that triggered Nico's memory and revealed where he was. Nico had never dreamed about this before. In fact, he'd done everything in his power to avoid thinking about that day ever again. He slowly pushed himself to his feet. Brain, if you're doing this, this is the worst mental vacation of all time, he said bitterly. Nothing. If this is a god or a demigod or something else, Nico added, you're really starting to annoy me. Still, no response. So here he was, back in the basement of that cathedral whose name he did not remember, looking for... Right, the scepter of Diocletian. Except, someone else had been here with him. Oh, Jason Grace. A new pit opened in Nico's stomach. Most of the time, emptiness was his best friend. But there was a vacancy in his heart that had never been filled since Jason. Ever since he... Nico gulped. Even in this ridiculous dream, Jason was gone. Nico wiped a tear from his cheek. Okay, this has to stop, he said. Please, just let me wake up. You still think this is a dream? Nico spun toward the voice. Who's there? Come now, Nico D'Angelo, don't you remember? He inched forward until the voice's source came into view, a marble bust of Diocletian sitting atop its pedestal, staring right at Nico. The emperor's head was still on his shoulders, no signs of it ever having been broken, which made sense in the weird logic of this dream. Without Jason here to smash it, the bust would still be in one piece. Nico's memories of this day poured over him, a waterfall of images and sensations that he had kept locked, deep in his mind. One of them rose to the surface. Jason grabbing Nico and lifting him in the air while they chased down Favonius, the strange winged man who had been buying an ice cream cone in Dalmatia. Things had seemed so much simpler then. When you saw a wind god buying ice cream, you chased him. When anyone tried to touch you, you lashed out. Nico had always hated being touched. As soon as Jason set him down that day, Nico had barked, "Don't ever grab me again." Now, staring at that unnerving bust of Diocletian, Nico wished for nothing more than to feel Jason Grace's protective arms around him. But Jason wasn't here. Behind Nico, a different voice said, "Are you ready?" Nico spun once more, and there, leaning against one of the columns, stood Favonius, the Roman god of the west wind. He was dressed exactly as he had been that day. A red tank top over an aggravatingly bright set of Bermuda shorts and Huarache sandals. "You," Nico snarled, "get out of my dreams." "Oh, Nico," said Favonius, shaking his head. "If only it were that easy." "Nothing is easy for me," Nico said. "I've come to expect that." "Then you know I have to take you to see someone." There was no joy in the god's face, none of the excitement or eagerness that Nico had seen last summer. Favonius looked scared. "Please, no," Nico began. "You have to fix it, Nico." Nico's heart hammered even harder against his ribs. What came next in the real world had been, well, truly one of the worst things Nico had ever been through, which was saying a lot for him. He'd had to endure Cupid, who was no adorable little winged cherub. The intense, intimidating god of desire had forced Nico to confess his crush on Percy Jackson in front of Jason, all so they could acquire the scepter. The ordeal had proved vital to winning the war against Gaia. It had also torn a wound in Nico that still hadn't healed. "Whatever this is," said Nico, "I get the message. I need to listen. I am listening, so I don't need to go through this again." "You have to talk to him," said Favonius, "but not for the reason you think." Nico tried to steady his breathing. He forced himself to ask, "Will Jason be there?" He wasn't sure which answer would be more painful, yes or no. The god's expression darkened. "No, Nico, he's gone." Then he added softly, almost to himself, "They'll all be gone eventually." Without another word, Favonius dissolved into a swirl of dust and sunlight. The wind wrapped around Nico and lifted him off the floor. Even in a dream, Nico hated the sensation, like his entire body was being torn to atoms. They zipped through the smallest cracks in the church windows, then raced across the Croatian countryside without regard for gravity or mass or his stomach. All Nico's thoughts and feelings collided with one another, vying to exist simultaneously in his mind. He had literally fallen apart into a mess of emotions. "At least I am hashtag on brand in my dreams," he thought. Then, Will would hate that joke. The wind deposited him on a hill overlooking the ruins of Salona. Put back together again, Nico's thin body trembled with nausea. He felt like he had Sisyphus in his throat, eternally pushing his stone up the steep incline. "Ugh," he coughed. "That feeling is just as bad in a dream." Favonius's disembodied laughter floated around him. "Look at you, still thinking this is a dream. You are so cute when you're delusional, Nico D'Angelo." Nico really, really hated being called cute. He had no time for retorts, though. The wind faded, and Favonius was gone. Nico scanned the ruins. They looked exactly as they had before. Crumbling, decaying shells of buildings, moss-covered lines of stone, a once great Roman city reduced to a field of rocks. Nico still wasn't impressed. He'd seen too many ruins just like these over the years, reminders of how quickly mortal creation could turn to rubble. He raised his hands. "Let's get on with it then. Cupid, I'm here." Nico waited. But there was nothing. No booming, rushing voice taunting him, coercing him to reveal his most painful secret. Then suddenly, Cupid's voice was everywhere. "You know what you need to do." The words whizzed past Nico's ear. Nico tried to act unfazed. It was just a dream about a god who had left Nico wounded, shattered, and exposed. But still a dream. This time, he would not be Cupid's chew toy. He crossed his arms. "I get it," he said. "I don't need convincing anymore. I'll go to Tartarus." "That's not enough, Nico D'Angelo. Look upon me. Look upon you. But I thought no one could see you in your true form." Unseen, Cupid slammed into him, hurling Nico backward into a broken column. "Look upon me." Cupid was now so close that Nico could feel his breath on his face. "I can't see you," Nico screamed. "Stop with these games. I am here." The voice came from behind him now, and all the hair stood up on Nico's arms. It was an instantaneous reaction, a fear so primal that without even thinking it, without issuing the command, Nico called forth skeletons. They rose from the earth beneath his feet, Moss and dirt and decay hanging from their bones. They ringed Nico, their stick-like arms in defensive postures, ready to fight for him. "Turn around, Nico. Look upon me." The voice had shifted direction again. Nico did not want to look. He had no rational reason to believe this, but he was convinced that if he actually did see Cupid, he would die. "Please, Nico, look at me." The voice had changed. It was warm, like honey, like a late summer sunset, like the first rush of heat from a campfire. It was Cupid, no. It was love. Nico turned slowly, and there stood Will Solace. His golden hair lit oh so perfectly in the dreamlike daylight of Salona. He wore the red smiling sun t-shirt that Nico had bought him as a joke, and that pair of camouflage shorts with the frayed hems. He strode barefoot over to Nico. Deep inside, Nico suspected that this was still Cupid playing games with him. But his anger softened anyway. "Will," said Nico, "I don't understand. What is this?" "Listen," said Will, stepping closer. "I've been listening. Why won't anyone tell me what I'm listening for?" Will reached out, and Nico did too. But just before Will's hand touched Nico's, he pulled back. "You have to do something, Nico," said Will, his eyes soft and sad. "I know." Will shook his head. "It's more than you think. When the time comes, tell me the truth." Nico laughed. There was an edge of hysteria to his voice, but laughter was the only reaction that made sense at this point. "Sure, Will. Cupid? Quill? Whoopid? What do I call you?" Will's face elongated like putty, his mouth opening wide, wider, so that Nico could see sharp, needle-like teeth lining his gums. Nico tried to back up, but the thing, whatever it was, leaped forward and screamed one last command. "Wake up!" "Nico!" He opened his eyes with a jolt, but couldn't make out the figure looming over him. Nico kicked out with his right leg, unfortunately landing a foot square in his boyfriend's stomach. Will howled and tumbled off the edge of the bed, then curled up on the floor of Hades' cabin. "Nico, I swear," he groaned. "How do you pack all that energy into your body?" I'm sorry, said Nico. "You scared me." Will winced as he sat upright. "I think you have that backward. I could hear you screaming bloody murder from my cabin." Nico put his head in his hands. I had a bad dream. Bad dreams, plural. Really bad dreams." Nico felt a weight settle on the bed next to him, and he looked up to see Will there. "I'm really sorry about the kick in the gut." Will smiled, and warmth washed over Nico. "Can I hold you? Would that be okay with you?" Shame burned Nico's cheeks. He didn't like Will seeing him so vulnerable. But he nodded, because what he needed overrode his pride. Will pulled him close, and Nico quietly cried into his boyfriend's chest. "It's all right." Will ran his hand up and down Nico's back. They were just dreams. But were they? Nico thought. Before he could tell Will any of the details, the door to the cabin burst open. Chiron stood there, his eyes wide.
Oh, no. Have I interrupted something?
Nico pulled away from Will and wiped his face with the back of his hand.
No. It's okay, he said. We were just talking.
Well, that's fine, said Chiron awkwardly. I'm sorry to barge in so late at night, but we have an emergency. Nico grimaced.
Was it my screaming? Did I accidentally summon a battalion of skeletons while I was sleeping?
What?
No, Kyron hesitated. At least I hope not. Let's revisit that in a bit. First, we have a visitor who urgently needs to speak to you. Kyron stepped aside, and Nico's heart twisted with dread as Rachel Elizabeth Dare, the current Oracle of Delphi, entered the cabin. She pulled back the hood of her sweatshirt, and her long, gorgeous red hair spilled out. She looked flushed and exhausted, as if she'd run here all the way from Brooklyn. Nico, she said. Thank the gods. You have to listen. Before he could protest that he'd already received that particular message loud and clear like a million times already tonight, dark green smoke began to pour out of Rachel's mouth. Chapter 5. The smoke had a bitter, sulfuric smell, and Nico, Will, and Kyron all started coughing. Rachel's pupils dilated. Then her eyes turned completely black as the words slithered out of her mouth in the rasping voice of the Oracle. Go forth and find the one who calls out your name, who suffers and despairs for refusing to remain. There, leave something of equal value behind, or your body and soul no one will ever find. Rachel's knees buckled, and Will dashed forward to catch her before she hit the floor. Kyron gripped the door frame with one hand. His face looked as pale as the gray flecks in his beard. After all these years, he said grimly, I have never gotten used to hearing those. Nico, are you all right? Nico nodded, his heart thumping. Kyron clopped into the cabin, lowering his head to fit. I know these prophecies can be hard to understand when you first hear them, he said. Take all the time you need. We don't have to discuss and dissect it now. Nico caught the sharp, chastising look that Will cast his way. Well, this is awkward, Nico muttered. Kyron tilted his head. Why? Do you know what this prophecy is about? Nico exhaled, trying to purge the last remnants of his dreams. He wondered if he could still be trapped in a nightmare. Kyron, I wanted to tell you and Mr. D at some point, but, well, I just never found the right time. It's not a new prophecy, Will explained. We've already heard it. Kyron glanced at Rachel, who was now breathing more steadily in Will's arms. I'm sorry, the centaur said. Are you telling me that Miss Dare just rushed here in the middle of the night to give you a rerun prophecy?
They're telling the truth, said Rachel, sounding miserable. This prophecy, it keeps coming back, again and again.
Nico's heartbeat stumbled.
Keeps coming back? You mean this isn't just the second time?
Rachel winced, then started to cough. Will helped her sit up.
I'll get you some water.
He dashed to the bathroom and came back a moment later with a cup that Nico really hoped was clean. Rachel took it gratefully.
I guess someone really needs your attention, Nico.
Her expression was strained but sympathetic.
The previous times, I thought maybe I was just caught in a feedback loop or something. Maybe a glitch left over from Apollo's fight with Python. I didn't want to worry you. But this time, the urge overwhelmed me. I had to come find you.
Will placed his hand on her shoulder. How many times has the prophecy repeated? Rachel's cheeks flushed. She took a sip of water.
12.
12 times? Said Nico. Are you serious? Kyron scowled.
This is an alarming situation. In all my years, I've never heard of something like this.
Rachel nodded and took another sip.
It's like a constant reminder that the quest needs to be fulfilled, that it hasn't been undertaken yet.
Nico frowned. So you've basically become like one of those annoying notifications in a video game, reminding me to complete a side mission. She glared at him.
Nico silently cursed himself. That came out wrong, I'm sorry. You're not annoying, Rachel. You know what I meant.
Rachel mustered a weary smile. She nodded her thanks to Will as he helped her to her feet.
This prophecy is definitely annoying. Whatever you need to do, Nico, it would be great if you could get started. Then maybe I can turn off my notifications.
Nico glanced at Will.
It's him. There's no way it's not.
Who are you talking about? Said a new voice.
Mr. D stood in the doorway. He had on a leopard print tank top, bright yellow board shorts, and pink flip-flops. Basically a typical outfit for the god of partying. In one arm, he was cradling a large metal mixing bowl.
Nico sniffed the air. Is that popcorn?
I figured there might be a show happening out here.
Mr. D tossed a kernel into his open mouth.
What's a good show without popcorn?
Nico bit back an angry comment. A repeating prophecy isn't exactly a show.
Mr. D's eyes widened.
Oh, there's a repeating prophecy. Perfect.
He walked over to Nico's bed and plopped down at the foot. And here I thought it was going to be a boring fall at camp. I was even thinking about staging a cage match for the dryads.
Kyron glared at the camp director. We've talked about that, Mr. D.
You can participate if you like, Kyron.
The god said cheerfully.
I'd love to see you go hoof on fist with a few feisty mulberry bushes.
Kyron sighed.
Could we please focus on the problem at hand?
Absolutely. Mr. D shoveled popcorn into his mouth with glee.
Tell me about this repeating prophecy. Is it about me?
Do I finally gain my freedom from this miserable camp and once more become the toast of the gods, preferably with a bottle of 1945 Chateau Moton Rothschild?
Dionysus, please, said Kyron. I don't think this is a joking matter.
I'm not sure about that, grumbled Nico.
Given that Rachel has been more or less forced to become a prophecy voicemail system.
Nico, said Will in a warning tone.
Well, he isn't wrong, said Rachel. It's like all those annoying calls my dad gets about renewing his car warranties.
Except this is Bob, said Nico,
finally saying his name out loud.
That's who the prophecy is about.
You mean the Titan Iapetus?
Asked Kyron.
I thought he was still in Tartarus.
Tartarus, eh?
Mr. D grabbed another fistful of popcorn.
This is getting better by the second.
Kyron ignored that.
Do you think Iapetus has become a threat again? A rogue titan would certainly be cause for concern.
Bob isn't like that anymore, said Nico. He changed after his dip in the River Lethe. He's nice now, considerate. He wants to be helpful.
The others regarded him in silence. The scent of their skepticism was almost as pungent as Mr. D's popcorn. Nico wanted to believe what he was saying, but doubts gnawed at him. What if Bob had died helping Percy and Annabeth? If he'd regenerated from the primordial landscape of Tartarus the way monsters did, would he be Iapetus again? The prophecy had called him the one who suffers and despairs for refusing to remain.
Could this be some sort of trick? Luring Nico down to the worst place in the cosmos only to help a hostile titan escape? He's my friend, he said, mostly to himself. I've been hearing his voice for months, even before the prophecy. He needs my help.
Or it could be a trap, suggested Mr. D. Which would be very exciting, by which I mean it would be terrible, of course.
Kyron frowned. Must you be so negative, Dionysus?
Must you ignore the obvious? The god shot back. I'm not saying it's the only explanation, but we have to consider the possibility.
He turned a kernel of popcorn in his fingertips as if it might hold the answer.
Nico and I have been talking about some things he's been experiencing. Dreams, waking visions, a voice calling out to him from Tartarus. Now, I learned there was a repeating prophecy. I haven't even heard it yet, and I'm already skeptical. I don't want to see him get hurt, Kyren.
Nico felt an unexpected surge of gratitude. He'd never heard Mr. D come so close to admitting that he cared about another person.
Does that mean I can share your popcorn?
Nico ventured.
Absolutely not.
Aren't we ignoring the bigger issue?
Will asked,
because I feel like we're ignoring it.
You mean me going to Tartarus?
Said Nico.
You've already made your feelings about that clear many times. Will stared at the ceiling as if wondering why he had to be the voice of reason.
Whether or not it's a trap, he said,
it's still a trip to Tartarus, and I'm not a fan of those lines in the prophecy. There, leave something of equal value behind, or your body and soul no one will ever find.
Bit of a forced rhyme structure there,
Mr. D noted between crunching.
Kyren shot him a dirty look. I'm not ignoring that part, he said to Will.
And I agree. Without more information, we could never sanction such a dangerous quest.
I don't need a quest, Nico stood. Hearing Rachel's prophecy again, hearing it discussed aloud, made him feel suddenly resolved. Or maybe he was just feeling contrary and cranky after enduring Nico's greatest nightmare hits, Vols 1 and 2.
I have to go.
Kyren's expression was heavy and sad. Perhaps he was remembering all the other heroes he had trained over the centuries, who had said, I have to go, and then never returned.
Nico, we are in a period of relative peace. In recent months, we have learned at great personal cost that prophecies can be manipulated or just plain malicious. No offense to Miss Dare.
None taken, Rachel muttered. I'm just happy to be spewing green gas again.
It would be better for you to enjoy this time off, Kyren continued.
To heal instead of running after.
You're not the one being tormented in your dreams.
Nico immediately wished he hadn't blurted it out like that. If Bob really was in danger, doing whatever he could to reach out for help, then he was the one being tormented. No matter how painful Nico's dreams were, Tartarus was worse. On the other hand, if something were tormenting an immortal titan like Bob, a being older than the gods, what chance would Nico stand against such a force?
Is that what you were dreaming about?
Will's voice stirred him from his thoughts.
Bob and Tartarus?
Not exactly, said Nico. At least, not directly. He decided to tell them everything. He started with a long summer of frequent flashbacks and nightmares.
Clearly, Mr. D wasn't as interested in that part since he'd heard all about it already. Instead of listening, he continually tossed popcorn into the air and tried to catch it in his mouth. He missed. A lot, which Nico took as proof that he was not the god of hand-eye coordination. As soon as Nico got to last night's greatest hits parade of trauma, though, Mr. D hung on every word.
Fascinating, Mr. D said once Nico had finished.
I know that mortal dream worlds are confusing, elaborate, and vivid, but that marathon sounds absolutely absurd.
Thanks, I guess, said Nico.
Look, the point is that every memory, every thought and emotion in my head is screaming at me to listen. And Bob is the one who's calling out.
It could be a trap, but I don't think so.
Bob is suffering down there. He needs my help, and Rachel's prophecy getting stuck on repeat.
I think that means the situation is getting worse. Bob is running out of time. I have to try to help him.
Dionysus picked a fleck of popcorn from his godly teeth.
I thought your father made it so no one alive could enter his realm anymore, he said.
You know, after that whole doors of death business.
That doesn't mean I shouldn't go, said Nico. There's always a way into the underworld, and my father doesn't need to know. I have to try.
Rachel shivered.
But leave something of equal value. That's the part I can't wrap my mind around. Equal to what? Bob's life?
Will's blue eyes fastened onto Nico.
He had that slightly worried, slightly exasperated expression he got when one of his patients didn't follow doctor's orders. Nico, you can't trade one life for another. Please, tell me you'd never consider abandoning someone else in Tartarus to save Bob. Or even worse, sacrificing yourself. Nico tamped down a wave of irritation. Of course, that thought had occurred to him, too. And his parade of nightmares, all featuring people he had lost, only heightened his fears. But he had to help Bob. He had to lay it as long as he could. You're assuming this is a rescue mission, he said. What if Bob needs my help with something but also wants to stay in Tartarus? Mr. D cackled. Who would want to stay in that realm of nightmares? Or maybe the equal value thing isn't a life for a life, Nico suggested weakly. Maybe Bob wants to bring something back with him, like his broom or something, and he needs a broom of equal value. Will gave Nico a look that said, come on, you don't really believe that, do you? And anyway, Nico forged ahead, a mortal life wouldn't be equal to the life of a Titan, would it? Mr. D nodded thoughtfully, then glanced at Chiron. The boy makes a good point. We immortals are clearly bigger ticket items. Chiron frowned. We know so little about all this, Nico. And Tartarus? Well, it's not a place where any of us should venture, mortal or immortal. But I've been there, said Nico. Did you all forget that I'm one of only 3 demigods who's ever come back from that wretched place alive? And I survived there the longest. If anyone can help Bob, it's me. I can do this on my own. Will marched over and grabbed Nico's hand. Yeah, that's not happening. If you go, I'm going with you. Nico actually laughed. No, you're not. That's the one thing that makes me okay with this quest, that I am not putting you in danger. Excuse me, noble McSacrifice, Will said. We're both perfectly capable of survival.
Chiron's hooves clopped nervously on the floorboards.
But a child of Apollo and Tartarus. Will's face fell. I can manage. Nico squeezed his hand. Will, you're a child of the sun. Where I'm going, there's no sunlight down there. I know that seems obvious, but it's a lot worse than what you're probably picturing. The true nature of Tartarus. I never want you to have to experience that. So your clever plan, said Will, is to sneak into the underworld by yourself, hoping your father doesn't notice, then slip down into Tartarus and... what? Bring Bob back here? Nico shrugged. I just want to give him a choice. He could go anywhere in the world, or if Bob wants to stay at camp, why not? He could build his own cabin, or... Oh, could he? Mr. D interrupted. You're talking about releasing an allegedly reformed Titan into the world, and I am putting a great deal of emphasis on allegedly. You can't just make a decision like that without consulting the camp leadership, which would be... Oh, yes, me.
For once, said Chiron, I agree with Mr. D. This is an extraordinarily dangerous idea.
What options do I have at this point? Nico growled. Wait until my nightmares get so bad my head explodes? Wait until Rachel is spewing that prophecy 24 hours a day? Would not be my first choice, Rachel admitted.
I must say, however, Mr. D interjected, this is better than any human film I've ever seen. The drama, the twists, I should have made a second bowl of popcorn. Nico turned to face Chiron.
I can't let this keep happening. Someone is begging me for help, and I can't just sit here and ignore it.
The old centaur bowed his head, as if he were already contemplating the words he would have to write on Nico's tombstone. I can see that I won't be able to dissuade you, no matter how foolish your plan. But even if I grant a formal quest, you're forgetting a very important detail. To succeed, a quest needs 3 people. That is tradition.
That is the sacred number.
Nico shook his head. I thought about that. Percy and Annabeth went through Tartarus, just the two of them. He glanced at Will. If my stubborn boyfriend insists on going, I do.
Then Will and I can do the same.
We're just as good a team. Besides, when we do find Bob, that'll bring the number up to 3.
A fair point, Chiron conceded grudgingly. But if you do need to leave something behind, or someone...
It was second nature for Nico to assume the worst. But at the moment, he wished that his brain was wired for a little more optimism. If saving Bob truly required Nico to leave something of equal value behind... He looked at Will. Nico's mouth dried up instantly.
No, that couldn't be it. That would be so cruel.
But wasn't that Nico's whole history? Wouldn't this just be the cherry on the ice cream sundae of his life?
Hey.
Will squeezed his hand. This isn't some hero play I'm trying to make. I promise you right here and right now, Nico, I'm not going to trade myself for Bob, and you're not going to have to make that choice.
Nico's jaw dropped.
What? That's what you're worried about, isn't it? You think the prophecy is suggesting that one of us will have to stay behind to save Bob, right?
Nico's mouth was still hanging open.
I do know you, Nico, said Will. And I'm telling you, that's not going to happen.
Wow,
Nico said. I feel like I'm standing in front of all of you in my underwear.
Nico scanned the faces of the others, Mr. D, Rachel, Chiron.
There were no more objections, no more debates about the ethics of rescuing Titans from Tartarus or trading lives to fulfill prophecies. They seemed to have accepted Nico's destiny, which scared Nico more than a little. This was really happening.
You know, Mr. D said, breaking the silence, I've changed my mind. You've earned my respect, Nico D'Angelo.
He handed over his nearly empty bowl of popcorn.
It's not hot anymore, but knock yourself out.
Nico's curiosity got the better of him. He scooped out a handful and gave it a try. To his surprise, even at room temperature, the buttery herbed popcorn tasted like the ambrosia of the gods.
You made this?
He tried not to sound too incredulous.
Like, magically?
Oh, no magic, Mr. D said. I watched some videos on that YouTube thing. Some fellow named Alton Brown taught me the perfect recipe.
Nico stared at him, but the god didn't seem to be joking.
Look at you learning new things. I may be older than this entire country, but I've still got a few tricks up my sleeves.
I don't think I've ever seen you wear anything that had sleeves,
Mr. D winked.
Exactly.
Anyway, Will broke in. Before I change my mind, are we good here?
He turned to Chiron. Is this quest official?
The centaur took a deep breath.
Nico D'Angelo?
That's me,
Nico said.
Do you accept this quest that's been laid before you?
Nico hesitated. So much for bravado. He wasn't sure what it would be like to return to his father's realm, or to visit the terrifying, draining reality of Tartarus. Also, between the recurring prophecy, the relentless dreams, and the voice of Bob crying out from Tartarus, it didn't feel like he had much of a choice. This was all inevitable, wasn't it? On the other hand, he was sure he couldn't leave Bob down there any longer. Bob deserved help after everything he'd done and everything he'd had to endure.
I accept,
Nico said. Mr. D clapped.
Bravo, Nico. You have yourself a quest. More importantly, you've given me the most entertaining night I've had in Camp Half-Blood in months.
Chiron looked much less excited. Will squeezed Nico's hand, but Nico could feel the way his boyfriend's fingers trembled. Rachel hugged herself.
I hope this works. For your sake, of course, but also because I'm supposed to leave for Paris next week. I'd love to be able to make it there without prophecy smoke billowing out of me on the plane ride over.
It'll work, said Nico. I know it will.
but a small pit of dread settled at the bottom of Nico's stomach. He hoped he hadn't made the wrong decision.
The two of us?
Nico turned to Will, who still wore a haunted look on his face.
What do you want to know about us?
Anything, Gojira said. Tell me a story in exchange for a boat. That is all I will ask of you.
There are so many stories we could tell, said Nico. How do I narrow it down to just one?
The nymph smiled. Would you tell me how you two first came into each other's lives?
And if we do that, said Will sluggishly, you'll help us.
She nodded. If it is satisfactory to me, yes. Nico gazed at Will and shrugged. Then he took a deep breath and began.
Chapter 6. Nico was doing his best not to get annoyed at how much preparation was swirling around him at the current moment. He had accepted that Will was coming with him on this journey. The prospect still left Nico's nerves tingling around the edges. But he was also excited to show Will, well, his other home. Even if he didn't have the closest relationship with Hades, and despite the many difficult moments he'd had in the underworld, Nico still had a fondness for the place. He wanted to get going. But Will and Chiron were rummaging around Apollo's cabin in a state of high anxiety. The two were treating this like Will and Nico were about to go to war with every Titan, all the Roman emperors, and a reconstituted Gaia. Do you think I'll need warmer clothes too? Will asked Chiron.
I mean, it's cold in the underworld, isn't it?
I don't really know, said Chiron.
In unison, they both turned to Nico, and their expressions made them look like confused puppy dogs.
You might need a hoodie, he said, at most.
Okay, I'll pack an extra in case the first gets dirty, said Will.
Nico glanced down at Will's legs, which were unsurprisingly bare from the knees down. As usual, Will had on a pair of cargo shorts.
Will, said Nico,
how are you worried about it being cold in the underworld, but you're still wearing shorts?
He shrugged. My legs don't really get cold. Plus, cargo shorts are so handy, you never know when you might need to store something in a pocket.
I swear, Nico said with a sigh. You're making this way more complicated than it has to be. All we need is water, maybe a change of clothes, and that's it.
What about food? Said Will. We're demigods, not ethereal spirits. We still have to eat.
I've got that covered, said Nico with a sly smile.
Besides, if we run low, our friends in the underworld will help us.
Will narrowed his eyes at Nico, but he didn't say anything. He stuffed another hoodie in his knapsack. Nico was certain that was the third one, and then crossed the cabin to the doorway.
Okay, I'm done this time, Will said. Promise.
Did you bring extra socks? Chiron said, trotting over to them.
Chiron, you don't even own socks, do you?
Said Nico.
No, but that doesn't mean I can't appreciate them. Nothing wrong with having an emergency pair of socks.
I have enough of those, thank you, said Will.
Plus, if I hold up Nico one more minute, I think he'll send me to the underworld the old-fashioned way.
Like you said yesterday, said Nico.
You know me well.
What are you bringing, Nico?
Chiron asked. Nico grabbed the lapels of his leather bomber jacket.
This,
he said, opening the jacket wide. He had on a black shirt with a white skull sitting beneath a red line and the letters A-F-I. Then he patted the weapon at his side.
And my trusty sword.
Will frowned. Nothing else?
What else do I need?
Well, said Chiron,
at least allow the dryads to pack some ambrosia and nectar for you as a safety measure. What if one of you, or both of you, gets hurt?
Nico groaned.
Fine, but then we leave after that, okay?
Deal, said Will. They did not leave after that. Juniper insisted on providing a fresh batch of ambrosia squares. While those were being prepared, Grover, the satyr, called in via an iris message and demanded to give a little pep talk to Nico, which Nico begrudgingly sat through. It was sweet, but Nico thought everyone was overreacting. Extra hoodies, ambrosia, and well-meaning advice weren't going to make much difference once they got to Tartarus. The thing that finally got Will to stop delaying the inevitable was when Nico told him that they were going to miss their train if they didn't get going.
Okay,
Will said, stuffing Juniper's ambrosia and nectar into his knapsack. Nico wondered if that knapsack was somehow limitless because no other bag could fit this much stuff.
The taxi's coming soon?
Kyron nodded. A regular human taxi, as requested. Nico gritted his teeth.
We'd get to Manhattan faster if we...
No, said Will sharply. No, after seeing Kayla and Asanoff, I'm good with this.
I think you're missing out, frankly, said Nico.
Those three old ladies are a million times cooler than we'll ever be. Or I could call Jules Albert, that would be free.
No zombie chauffeurs either.
Will's eyes were pleading.
Please, grant me just a bit of normal, boring human travel before the underworld.
Nico sighed.
Fine.
Which is why, a few minutes later, Nico and Will packed themselves into a boring yellow taxi on Farm Road 3.141. The driver was hunched over in the front seat. He had on a gray cardigan and a black driver's cap, and his car smelled vaguely of something smoky and dead. The driver twisted around to stare at them.
You boys going to the Long Island Railroad Station in Montauk?
Yeah, said Will. Our train leaves in 15 minutes.
Will we be late?
The man smiled and he had a gold cap on one of his front teeth.
Not in this car, you won't.
The engine revved, and the car seemed to jump forward as it sped away from Camp Half-Blood. There was no Gray Sisters magic at work here.
No. This was just the beauty of a Long Island cab driver on a tight schedule.
Nico had a blast with the window rolled down. As the traffic whizzed by on the Sunrise Highway, the driver regaled them with the story of how he once got a movie star client from Sag Harbor to the Islip Airport in under 30 minutes. As for Will, he was not doing as well. He had a white-knuckle grip on the door, his eyes were wide with terror, and he was obviously trying to get a handle on his breathing. The driver got them to the station with 6 minutes to spare. They raced up the steps to the platform, Nico easily outrunning his boyfriend. Though that was mostly due to Will having to get his land legs again.
Was that worse than the Gray Sisters?
Will panted.
Because it felt like it was worse than the Gray Sisters.
You were the one who wanted to travel like a normal human, said Nico. By the time the train arrived, they'd fallen into an uncomfortable silence. The doors opened, and they quickly moved inside. The car they'd chosen was about a third full, so they headed to a part where there were fewer people. Will struggled to fit his knapsack on the luggage rack above the seats.
I'm telling you, said Nico, sliding into the seat closest to the window. You won't need half that stuff on the journey. We'll see about...
Will began, and then something toppled out of his bag and smacked him in the face.
Ow!
Nico restrained himself because he knew laughing wouldn't make the situation better, even though it was very, very funny. Will rubbed at his face and then crouched down to pick up the thing that had fallen, a white sphere about the size of a softball.
Will, what is that?
Nothing, he said, and stuffed it back into his knapsack.
Oh no, I must know what that is.
Will sighed, brought it back down, and handed it over. When Nico gripped it, the entire thing lit up so blazingly bright he almost dropped it.
Sweet Hades, what is this?
Nico blinked repeatedly as little white spots appeared in his vision.
Don't laugh, Will warned. I can't guarantee that I won't.
It's a battery-powered sun lamp.
A what?
Look, said Will. I don't know what it's like down in the underworld, and plenty of people use these things to help them get through the winter months when the sun is weak. It's a form of light therapy. I used to have one when I traveled with Mom.
Nico was actually impressed. Okay, that's kind of amazing.
and maybe it'll delay the effects of the underworld on you.
That's the idea.
Will returned the sun lamp to his bag and sat down next to Nico. I brought extra batteries, too.
What didn't you bring on this quest, Will Solace?
Will didn't answer. Moments later, the train crawled forward, and soon the various Long Island neighborhoods were whizzing past them. Nico enjoyed the panorama, the woods, the industrial parks, the rundown strip malls and rows of cozy brick houses where normal mortals lived normal lives. Will, however, was clearly nervous. He bounced his right leg up and down as he glanced around the train car. Nico reached over and placed his hand on the bobbing thigh.
Will, you can't do that the whole train ride.
Sorry,
he said, just trying to focus. I don't think you have to worry quite as much as you are,
said Nico softly. Will raised an eyebrow.
Nico, we're going to Tartarus. Are you seriously trying to tell me that it wasn't that bad when you were there?
I mean, yeah, it was awful, okay? But I know a lot more about navigating it now than I did then. Plus, I'm choosing to go this time, rather than being pulled down there and getting kidnapped by a pair of attention-seeking giants.
I still think you're underselling the trauma, said Will.
But can you at least appreciate that I have no experience with the underworld in general, let alone Tartarus? So this is freaking me out a lot more than it is you.
Okay, said Nico, reaching for Will's hand. That's fair.
Will closed his eyes and leaned back in his seat. His breathing slowed, and Nico watched his chest rise and fall. Will did this sometimes when he needed to calm down, so Nico let him be. Nico's gaze wandered over the train car. A couple of businessmen in plain black suits were having a muted conversation a few rows up. A woman with dark brown skin and locks was laughing at her young daughter, who was standing in the aisle without holding on to anything, trying to keep her balance.
Subway surfing,
said Will, which startled Nico.
What?
You try to stay upright while the train moves without holding on to anything, he said.
Though I bet it would be much harder to do in the city. Those trains are way lurch here.
How do you know about that? Do they even have subways in Austin, Texas?
Will smirked. There's a lot you don't know about me, Nico.
Nico scoffed.
Like what?
I love golden Oreos, for starters.
Oh, please, that's obvious. They're basically Apollo's version of an Oreo anyway.
And the morally superior choice.
We'll come back to that, said Nico.
What else don't I know about you, Will Solace?
I first visited New York City when I was...
Will counted on his fingers.
I think I was 9.
He gazed out the window as the train rolled into the next station. Mom was on tour and she was really excited because she was playing some big club in Manhattan a few nights in a row. But what I remember most about that trip was that she parked our van in this big, cavernous lot and said we would not drive a single second while we were in the city.
Why?
She told me you don't really get to see New York unless you're on the subway. So, everywhere we went, we took the train. We rode it up and down Manhattan. We took it out to Coney Island one day to go on a bunch of rides. We went out to Queens, too, to see the place where the World's Fair was held a long time ago. We even made the most amateur mistake possible. The train picked up speed again, and the conductor asked them to show their tickets. As Nico handed his over, he said to Will, I'm afraid to ask what your mistake was.
Well, it was very hot that summer, said Will. It's not the same out at Camp Half-Blood. In Manhattan especially, the heat gets trapped between all the buildings, and it's like a giant oven. So we'd just come out of the Met, and by the time we'd walked the 2 or 3 blocks to the train, we were sweating buckets. So we were super excited when the train arrived, because one of the cars was completely empty. Guaranteed seats in a perfectly air-conditioned car during the summer are so rare. Usually all the cars are jam-packed and humid.
Okay, said Nico. But the empty car was a good thing, right?
Will's smile faltered.
Well, no. Turns out if an entire train is packed except for one car, that's actually a warning sign.
Nico twisted up his face. A warning for what? Will wrinkled his nose.
Oh, gods, what, Will? Let's just say that when the doors closed, a very pungent and recognizable smell filled that car. Someone had made a deposit on the floor.
No. Nico grimaced. Are you serious?
It happens, said Will. I guess someone couldn't wait.
I would pass away, said Nico, right on the spot.
Will laughed at that, which felt like a small victory to Nico. We just moved cars at the next stop, and that was when Mom taught me about subway surfing.
Wow. I didn't get to travel to New York until the Battle of Manhattan.
Will grimaced. Not a great introduction to the city. Did you know that years before that, my mom and I were actually in Manhattan when my satyr found me and brought me to Camp Half-Blood? Monsters attacked me downtown.
No, said Nico.
Remind me to tell you that story someday. The way he said it, Nico got the message that he wasn't quite ready to share the details.
Sometimes I forget you've been all over this continent, said Nico. I mean, I've been a lot of places too, but mostly since coming to Camp Half-Blood.
Do you ever miss traveling?
Occasionally, said Will.
But I think it was more that I liked being with my mom. She has such an adventurous spirit, it's hard not to feel the same way when you're around her. And she wants to go see the world's biggest ball of twine or something.
Nico tried to imagine the world's biggest ball of twine. He found the concept vaguely terrifying.
He glanced a few rows up at the woman and her kid, who now sat in her mother's lap. He leaned against Will's shoulder.
Did you ever want, like a normal childhood?
He could feel Will fidget.
I don't think so, said Will after a moment of silence. Maybe sometimes I wanted the things I saw other kids experience. But I also got to travel all the time. My mom is basically like my best friend, and I wouldn't trade that for the world.
Nico considered that. Some days he struggled just to picture his mother's face. He remembered her voice in his nightmares.
Vita mia. Do you ever think about what life would be like if you weren't a demigod?
He asked. Will jerked away from him.
What? Why would you say that, Nico? It's just a question.
No, I don't ever think about that. Will gazed into the distance.
I think about all the wonderful experiences I've had because of who I am. I've gone to help people to save their lives, Nico, and I've protected the world from imminent danger.
Then he gave Nico one of his soul-warming smiles.
I can heal people. I can glow in the dark. And, well, I met you.
Oh, gods, groaned Nico. No cheesiness. It's too early in the day, Will.
Will snuggled up to him.
But it's true. I'm very thankful we're in each other's lives.
You cheated with that answer, said Nico.
But I'll allow it.
Will planted a kiss on Nico's temple.
My grumpy ball of darkness.
The world's largest grumpy ball of darkness, thank you very much. They spent the rest of the train ride in silence. At some point, Will began to doze. Nico watched the world go by outside. At Woodside, the last stop before Manhattan, the mother and daughter got off. The young girl skipped alongside her mother on the platform, and her carefreeness made Nico's heart sink. Will was right. There was so much about being a demigod that Nico would never want to give up. And he certainly didn't want to even imagine a world without Will. But there was more to what they'd been born to than just abilities, demigod friends, and ridiculous adventures. The images from Nico's dream last night swirled around in his mind. There were darker aspects. Loneliness, pain, isolation. And all those things made up who Nico was. Did Will not see that? Or did he only focus on the positive things about being a demigod? The things full of light and promise. The things he wanted to see. Sometimes Nico wasn't sure.
Did that make him a bad boyfriend? He had nothing to judge this against because he'd never gotten as close to anyone as he had with Will. How did other couples do this? Did Annabeth and Percy ever doubt each other? At the thought of his friends, Nico realized that there was a possible solution to some of his anxiety over this trip, and maybe Will's, too. Who else knew more about Tartarus? When the train finally pulled into Penn Station, Will was quick to rouse. He yawned.
Didn't expect to fall asleep. Where to now?
A little last-minute detour, said Nico, shaking off the nerves that had crept over him. Humor me, and I promise it will be worth it. As Nico explained that they had to catch another train uptown, he noticed Will reaching under the collar of his blue t-shirt and running his fingers along the gold chain he wore. The chain Nico had given him. And like Will's smile, it warmed Nico. Maybe he was overthinking all of this. It was clear Will cared deeply for him, and Nico let that one little gesture push away his worries as they headed into the maze of Penn Station.